This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
To reflect on the state of the nation address and to look at some of the aspects that the president spoke about. Neil Coleman is a senior policy specialist at the Institute for Economic Justice to speak to us about some of the issues that they they found as positives and they found as negatives in as far as the delivery of the state of the nation is concerned. We'll also later on speak to Amnesty International. Senila Mohammed will join us in a few minutes. Neil, good morning to you and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Tabitha, and good morning to your listeners.
To what extent do you think that the president last night embraced and acknowledged issues, generally speaking, around human rights?
Around human rights?
Yeah. And economic, well, justice, you know, human rights issues, whether it's economic justice,
sure,
or whatever, whichever
sure
way you want
no,
to.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Economic justice is a fundamental human right.
Yeah.
And, you know, he spoke about the 1.7 million more people who are now unemployed. You know, he spoke about poverty and all these issues are human rights issues. So, you know, when you look out at the devastating impact of the COVID pandemic on ordinary people, it really fundamentally affects the human rights, you know, to dignity, to basic income, to a whole host of things, to basic health. And so the question of, you know, rolling out a people's vaccine, a vaccine that's affordable and universal, the question of protecting people's livelihoods, you know, protecting businesses and employment and giving basic income. These are all fundamental questions. And, you know, while the president acknowledged that these are critical issues, you know, we have to look overall at the paradigm that was contained in the speech and say, look, that overall paradigm or framework, is it oriented towards addressing those? And unfortunately, in large part, the answer is no. And the reason that the answer is no is because it's sort of a business as usual type speech where the idea is that in the medium term, we're going to roll out structural reforms, we're going to roll out infrastructure, broadband, et cetera, and somehow the economy is going to recover. But, you know, we're in a state of emergency. The economy is in emergency, people are and businesses are in an emergency, and therefore that requires emergency measures. So the idea of a medium term recovery without emergency relief and response measures is a bit of a pipe dream, I'm afraid. To be controversial, how is the rolling out of broadband going to help the 11 million people unemployed? How is the rolling out of infrastructure in 3 years' time going to help businesses that are dying now? So while all those things are important to do, they don't confront the emergency of the moment. So there needs to be a package which is integrated. And the IEJ has just issued us a document which analyzes the 500 billion rand relief package which government put in place last year.
Mm.
And we headed it, no recovery without rescue, which means that unless the rescue package kicks in, unless you save businesses, unless you deal with the destitution and hunger that communities are facing,
yeah,
the idea of recovery is a pipe dream. It won't happen.
Plus this 500 billion rands, I don't think the president went far enough in terms of breaking down what happened to it or what will still happen to the remnants of it as well, because the Business Day newspaper yesterday was saying that from where they are sitting, as far as they can calculate, only 200 billion rands has been accounted for. Whatever happened to the 300 billion, nobody knows.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, our research team did a detailed analysis, which, you know, I'll put on our Twitter account and maybe put on your Twitter account, and we actually make it 158 billion of the 500 billion has been spent or used.
Yeah.
And you're quite correct. You know, government should be accounting and should be giving us detailed report cards. Our researchers battled to find the information on some areas because the information is not sufficiently publicly available. So government is acting like, well, that old you know, relief issue from last year is now over. You know, we're now into a new phase, but we're in the second wave of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the prediction is that the third wave of the pandemic will come in June this year. But by that time, the 350 Rand grant will have been will have expired because they've only extended it to April, you know, 3 months from February. So this is a sort of muddled thinking that's going on in government. And to be so, you've got to look at what underlies this. It's not that the president is unaware of these issues. What underlies it is this unbelievable caution, of this fear of spending public resources to address this emergency, because Treasury has convinced government that we are facing such a fiscal crisis that we're unable to afford to spend, which is simply not the case. I mean, economic experts from around the world, including central bankers and so on, Janet Yellen now in the United States, who's the equivalent of the of President Biden's Minister of Finance,
yeah,
basically says, you've got to spend what it takes now. You've got to, the danger is doing too little too late. And this is the consensus internationally, even amongst the International Monetary Fund. But our government and our treasury are paralyzed by caution. I mean, we even saw with the issue of the vaccine, Treasury was trying to push back on financing the vaccine. Now, that is complete lunacy, because every day that you extra day that you're not vaccinating your people is another day that your economy is contracting, and therefore you're not getting the tax. Your economy is not growing. You're still in lockdown, and you know. So the multipliers. Hilary Joffe in the Sunday Times said the multipliers of introducing the vaccine speedily is something like 6 times the actual cost of the vaccine. In other words, you get back every rand that you spent on vaccines. You get back 6 rand. So it's a completely self-defeating sort of mindset, which is crippling our government.
Yeah, plus the fact that, you know, government is not explaining why it insists on being the sole distributor of these vaccines, because some people are saying, should you know, private companies be allowed, you'll also see big corporations buying vaccines for their employees as well, you know, among other examples.
Well, to be so, I think that's a danger, because as soon as you commercialize the distribution of vaccines, and what it basically means is that those who have the money buy up the vaccines, and then ordinary people don't have access to it.
So yeah, I think, but it's happening anyway. I mean, rich countries are already doing that.
Of course, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. That is happening, which is why there's a campaign for a people's vaccine. And what that means, Tabuso, is that, you know, countries, and South Africa has played a good role. We've got to give our government their due on this. You know, they've gone to the World Trade Organization and called for a waiver, what's called a waiver. In other words, intellectual property rights of these companies that are producing the vaccines, which have, by the way, been funded by public money in any event, to a large extent, that those need to be waived so that countries like South Africa and other countries in the global south can produce the vaccines themselves. But these large pharmaceutical companies are resisting it. So, yeah, it's a massive. Look, we can't underestimate the problems and the challenges government is facing. You know, this isn't just to hammer them for the sake of hammering them, but it's about, you know, shifting the mindset to address the nature of the crisis. You know, the president spoke about the fynbos being burnt by the fire. You know, our house is on fire. So we have to do something to put that fire out urgently.
Yeah. So some of us are of the view that the president could have at least acknowledged the disenfranchisement, for lack of a better word, of the consequences of the government system failures. And they touch by and large on the issues of economic justice, by and large, you know, spending power. I mean, look at these 350 rands. The system has failed. The people money most. The government did not acknowledge that. Some people say, I got it first month, then I struggled the other months. And others are saying, I got it first month, and then I got it the fourth month, and then I'm still waiting for
about,
the other one. And
all of you talking about the grant.
Yeah, the grant,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, this is spending. And you know, some people are also talking about how the president did not also acknowledge the damage that Eskom has done to small businesses as well, and to many others as a consequence of all of these power failures that we are experiencing in this country. Do you agree with that sentiment, or do you think that the president was trying to, in the midst of this crisis that we are facing, was trying to rather focus on what is possible, what has been done, and what needs to be done, rather than bombarding people with further trauma?
You see, you know, the question of what is possible and what needs to be done, I mean, that's a critical question that you've posed. It also relates to where you stand, what your priorities are. And if you've got the political will, you can do certain things. So, for example, on the COVID grant, we were told it had to end in October last year, but because of public pressure, it has now been extended by 6 months. Imagine if government had said in October, okay, we recognize this is a deep problem. We need to improve this grant to deal with some of the problems that you identified, like people not getting access to it regularly, some of the conditions that you have zero income, et cetera, unfair and unreasonable. The amount of 350 is too little. We need to at least increase it to the 585 to a food poverty line. Imagine if they said this and said, we'll also include caregivers and we'll extend it for a year. Then there would be certainty. Everybody would know that, look, this has been extended for a year. Government is investigating the introduction of a universal basic income so that everybody has access to income security. Then people know where they stand. But what you have is this muddled, piecemeal sort of decision-making. People don't know where they stand, and we lurch from crisis to crisis. So the idea that the economy has now stabilized and that therefore people don't need this grant, I mean, is completely contradicted by the evidence, because by the end of November last year, about 7 million people were getting this grant, and a lot more people were applying for that grant, which was up from about 4 million in April last year. So what it shows is that the need out there is massive, and people are applying in large numbers because they're facing hunger, they're facing starvation. So government needs to acknowledge those realities. Similarly with Eskom, you know, you need a serious solution, a structural solution relating to Eskom, which doesn't leave its debt crisis intact, lurching from crisis to crisis. We need to resolve the overhanging debt around Eskom. We need to resolve the question of the energy model. This is an emergency. This is something which needs to be dealt with immediately. So you could probably identify 5 or 6 issues, you know, like that: the vaccine, the question of grants, the question of Eskom, and a few others, which really are short-term emergencies which need to be dealt with, and government should be focusing absolutely with a laser focus on these issues.
Let's cut him some slack, shall we?
Sure.
And perhaps one way of doing that is to ask you, Neil, what you found as positives in as far as the speech was concerned.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's difficult, as I said, you know, to in the context of the framework or the paradigm of the speech being problematic, to be overly positive about it. But I think there are a lot of good things in the speech around the question of developing our industrial capacity in terms of buying local, in terms of rolling out infrastructure. You know, the employment stimulus, the presidential employment stimulus, where they're rolling out, you know, several hundred thousand job opportunities. Those are all positive things. But the question is, in the context of a deep crisis, how do those things bite quickly? It's very difficult. The job summit of the last few years has resolved all those same things. And therefore, you know, if government's not getting its act together, if its procurement policies are not in order, if they haven't dealt with the questions of corruption, significantly, if they're not resourcing these decisions. So we have a very good industrial policy in South Africa, but we're deindustrializing. And the reason for that we're deindustrializing is that there is not really a serious push of resources into developing you know, our industries in areas which are labor intensive and so on. That really requires a massive effort by the state. And we're in the mode of austerity. Even, you know, infrastructure that they're talking about, infrastructure spend has declined over the last number of years. So good intentions are frustrated by the underlying economic strategy which government is pursuing.
We are also joined by Jennifer Wells, campaign at Amnesty International. Jennifer, thank you for making time. Welcome to Power Talk. Good morning.
Thanks so much for having me. Good morning.
So the president spoke yesterday. What was of interest to you, some of the aspects that you noted out of the speech as Amnesty International?
Yeah, so our view is actually one of concern, actually, as to how the government plans to ensure basic human rights, particularly in areas that were already suffering prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, such as education, GBV, water, and climate. And there was no mention of education at all. And whilst we acknowledge the absolutely important need to respond to the health emergency and prioritize access to vaccines, the president gave no guarantee that critical issues like education will be adequately dealt with. You know, his speech gave a lot of promises, but there weren't a lot of plans, and he spoke a lot about building new, but what about needing to fix what we already have? So, yeah, our overall view is one of concern, really.
What did you expect the president to say specifically around the issue of GBV? Because that's where the misgivings from those quarters is coming from, to say he didn't say much what was required over and above what he alluded to.
Exactly. He mentioned the establishment of the GBV Response Fund, which is a welcome development. And he also talked about giving or committing 12 billion rand in the next 3 years to the implementation of the National Strategic Plan. However, these are just plans and they're, again, promises. And what we've seen time and time again is a failing in when it comes to implementation. You know, we know that still, only 8.6 of reported rape cases result in a conviction. In last year, the SAPS recorded an average of 116 cases of rape each day, which we know is just a small percentage of the actual cases, because those are only the ones that are reported. So there's still huge progress to be made in the country. And what we're really lacking and what we had hoped to see is a clear outline and plan as to how he's specifically going to tackle the investigation and prosecution of such crimes.
Neil, South Africans were going, oh, no, not again. I suppose when the president mentioned another body that would look into issues of crime and corruption, and an advisory body of some sort. Yeah. Is that a good idea?
Oh, gosh. You know, the question of bodies and investigations and commissions, et cetera, you know, is a difficult one. You know, in some cases, the body might be useful. It's hard to know without sort of understanding what the underlying strategy and intention is. At the end of the day, you know, these are political issues and government has to lead and take decisive action. So if a body helps, great, you know, but you can't outsource everything to agencies and bodies.
Jennifer, what was your reaction?
Similar. To have another body. And honestly, yeah, it's time and time again with each year we see another establishment of another body, another kind of accountability mechanism that really doesn't reap many rewards and drains the resources that could be otherwise diverted elsewhere into really critical areas such as, you know, securing water, which also wasn't really talked about last night. Over 3 million people still do not have access to water in South Africa. So we have these pressing human rights issues that are kind of almost being swept under the rug.
Yeah.
With the establishment of these new kind of bodies and other distractions.
Lorato is asking a very key question on Twitter. It says, please ask your guests if they think that the function of these advisory councils are a way of micromanaging ministers. For instance, the Water Advisory Council that the president also spoke about, by the way. Perhaps he has lost confidence in Minister Sisulu and he decided to get her babysitters. What do you think, Jennifer? Thank you, Lorato, for reminding us about this Water Advisory Council that he also mentioned. But, you know, is this perhaps a sign that ministers must be micromanaged?
Perhaps it could be. I mean, we've seen a flip-flopping of how ministers deliver, and time again they fail us. And corruption is a serious issue that we're dealing with, that just actually sinks into every single area of society and life all the time. So it could well be. It could well be.
What do you think, Neil?
Look, the more you proliferate agencies and, in a sense, outsource the responsibility for governance, the more difficult it becomes for the state to lead. I mean, you just have to look at something like NERSA, the electricity regulator. You know, government needs to lead. It needs to take critical political decisions, and it needs to ensure that there's effective governance, both of its ministries as well as its state-owned enterprises and so on. So, you know, this is a part of a disease which we've had since 1994, which is the disease of, you know, outsourcing government whether it's to the private sector, whether it's to agencies, contracting out, et cetera, and what we've done is systematically weaken the state's capacity and lack of political, you know, coherent direction. So in general, it's a bad idea, and the president needs to assert control over these different areas, and obviously that's going to lead to battles, you know, within the state and within the ruling party, but in a sense that is unavoidable.
All right, as we wrap up, Neil, a couple of people interested in that promise that you made about posting that report around, your research on the 500 billion rands. They're saying, please give them details where they could
vote. We'll post it on my Twitter feed, as well as the Institute for Economic Justice, IEJSA, and I'll also send it to Power FM.
Okay, thank you so much. But what is your Twitter handle, just in case?
Neil Coleman SA.
Neil Coleman SA.
Yeah, the IEJ, Institute for Economic Justice, IEJSA.
IEJSA, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jen, as well, for speaking to us. We really appreciate it.
Many thanks,
sir. Thank you so much. There you go. Yeah, you know, I also, we also forgot, I suppose, on the power line to deliberate on these advisory councils that the president spoke about as well. But we shall see. They say the proof of the pudding is in the eating, at least those that are in the know about. And some people actually tell us that there is value in being patient.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.